The following program is wholly sponsored and produced by Stu Taylor on Business, which is responsible for its content. The opinions and information provided on today's show are those of the guests and or their respective companies and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of this station. It is strongly recommended that all listeners conduct their own due diligence on all companies mentioned and or seek out the advice and counsel of a financial professional. The guests on this show may pay a fee to appear on the show and are not affiliated with the show in any manner. This is Stu Taylor on Business. Now, Stu Taylor.
All right, another great day. Every day you can get up and do things. It should be exciting, and it's exciting today as well as we open up with our first guest, Diana Finfrock Farah. She is the author of The Door of the Heart, and it is published by Author House, available at authorhouse.com, barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com. You can get it in paperback, hardcover, and ebook. And here she is with a great disposition. I've already been chatting with her, and it's not, I don't want to put the pressure on you, but it's nice to have you with you. Nice to have you with us, Diana. Good morning.
Thank you, Stu. Good morning.
Well, that's a, you know, that's kind of an emotional, profound, visceral title for the book, The Door of the Heart. Give us an idea of the what the book is about and how the title applies to it.
Well, I guess you could say it is an emotional and visceral book. From the outside looking in, you might think, oh my gosh, this is a book about politics and religion and social issues. You know, stay away from that. But in all honesty, it's really nothing about any of that. It's all about our human heart and our ability to, you know, look at the individual instead of the issue. And so I really, throughout the book, I'm introducing the reader to characters, both gay and straight, individuals and couples. And I'm trying to put a face on what we so quickly jump to as saying, you know, it's an issue. And so The Door of the Heart, I came up with that one because, you know, are we going to open our hearts or are we going to close them, you know, just like you would any door? So that's where that came from.
The book, it's a fictional book, but I have a sense here that there may be some nonfiction aspects to the book and some role you personally have played in it. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, boy, can I elaborate on that. Yes, it's definitely a work of fiction. It was actually inspired by Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin. Like I said, I try to introduce the reader to characters to put a face on what we so easily dismiss as an issue. And for me personally, yes, I've lived both sides of this issue. I was married to my husband for 20 years plus, and I enjoyed all the legal and social benefits, you know, that marriage brings. But then post-divorce, I fell in love with my best friend, Charlotte. And we were married in Canada in 2010, legally married in a church in Canada in 2010. And since then, I've also felt the other side of the legal and social discrimination. And the whole story came about, I was sitting in church one Sunday. Well, let me step back. Actually, I saw a PBS documentary on the abolitionists. And, you know, Frederick Douglass, Jefferson Davis,
right,
Benjamin Franklin, Harriet Beecher Stowe. Well, I grew up in Texas, and I had never read Uncle Tom's Cabin. When I was of age to have read it, you know, on a prescribed reading list for school, I was in junior high, and they were desegregating my school. And it was kind of a tense time. So, no, they didn't encourage us to read that book back then. So I thought, wow, I'm 50-something years old. I'm going to read Uncle Tom's Cabin. And in reading it, I was so struck by not only the story itself, but the reasons that Ms. Stowe actually wrote the book. I had never heard this story before. She had a 6-year-old son who had died of, I don't know, some childhood disease that would be easily curable now, and she was absolutely devastated. It was 1850, so the Fugitive Slave Act had just been proposed by Congress or enacted by Congress, and what that meant, even though she lived in a free state, if any person of color came through, they suspected them of being an escaped slave, and she was forced, you know, would have been forced to turn them in. Well, she was so upset by that, the death of her son, the feeling of loss when she had her son, you know, plucked from her arms, if you will. And then she literally saw on the streets children being plucked from their mother's arms. And she said in this documentary, she said, there's no way I can abide by that. I can't live with that, and I can't be a part of it. I need to do something. I need to make something good come out of Charlie's death. And so she wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin. And she, the crux of the whole thing for her, and I'll be honest, for me too, she was so upset by the fact that the Christian faith that had upheld her in such a trying time in her life was being used to justify, you know, these cruel acts. And so anyway, I read Uncle Tom's Cabin for the first time, finished it, looked over to my wife and said in a very flippant way, wow, I could write a book like that.
You know, and you did.
some other absurd statement. I could win the lottery, whatever. But I could write a book like that, and I could talk about the issues in the LGBT community today instead of slavery like she did.
I just wanted to check, during your 20 years of marriage, did you have any inkling that there was something that really wasn't right?
Not at all. It was very true and very sincere. You know, our marriage broke apart for reasons of its own. But
you had no other desires for someone of the same sex. It just came out after your marriage was over.
Yes.
That's really interesting. So it has been two distinctly different lives.
Yes, believe me. And it hasn't been that easy to wrap, you know, either of our brains around. We were both in the same situation. So, you know, that's a whole different story.
What do you want people to take from this book, aside from the fact of tolerance? And, you know, in many ways, we don't see much tolerance on many issues in this country. We're so highly polarized. And being in Texas, I imagine you can really feel the pain of your situation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much so. Very much so. And I guess what I hope to see happen with people who may read this book is that I really hope people will begin looking at each other, you know, with an emphasis on the individual instead of just on the issues that we think, you know, are separating us. Because somehow along the way, I think we've lost sight of the real person. And that's troubling to me. You know, we fall into habits of labeling people. You know, I certainly don't fit into any label. And for me, the only label I would rather use is a label of love. You know, I'm not this or that or you know, red or green or whatever. But labels make it easier for us because then we think we've thought something out. But really all we've done is allow another opinion or just some word, you know, to determine our belief system. So I guess back to your question, I'd really like to see us as a society and as individuals take others' views. I mean, not take others' views as our own anymore, because that doesn't require much forethought or questioning. You know, Socrates once said that our character is determined by the quality of the questions that we ask, and that our character is developed every day of our lives. It's not something we're born with. And that's what I'd like to see us do.
Who are some of the characters in the book, Diana?
Well, the characters are everyone. And I know that sounds silly, but I introduce the characters to such a broad range of people. And I think everyone will relate to someone, or maybe even several someones. You've got youth and adults and politicians and ministers, and we've all been that person who was bullied, or we've seen someone who was bullied and we didn't try to do anything to stop it. Maybe we've been that person who was so insecure that we did allow others think for ourselves, or maybe we wished, you know, we were that person who was strong enough to say, I've had enough of whatever it is, and make the change, that risky change that it takes, you know, in order to grow. But I've got quite a few characters that I think people will really, really relate to.
Is the book for any particular demographic, and what kind of a change do you expect the people might experience from reading your book? We've got about less than a minute.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I wouldn't say the book is for any demographic at all. As a matter of fact, reviews I've gotten from readers say that everyone needs to read this, straight or LGBT. It's really not a book about anything other than personal growth and personal responsibility to set up your own belief system, not just take the sound bite you hear and say, oh, well, that's what I believe because I don't want to have to, you know, think hard enough. But it is, I guess, the overarching message is about love, you know, love for God, love for yourself, love for your neighbor. It's really that simple. We've just complicated it with all our rules and expectations, and I think that unfortunately makes us completely miss those most basic things.
All right, well articulated, beautifully presented. The name of the book is The Door of the Heart. It's published by Author House, and it's written by our terrific guest, Diana Finfrock Farah. Thank you so much for bringing your story to the airways.
Well, thank you, Stu. I appreciate the time.
All right. This is Stu Taylor. More coming up.